Chapter 30. And the knot of hair fastened low in the neck under her dark hat, and the long wrinkled glove on the hand that held the sunshade. He came a step or two nearer, and she turned and looked at him. "Oh," she said, and for the first time he noticed a startled look on her face, but in another moment it gave way to a slow smile of wonder and contentment. "Oh," she murmured again, on a different note, as he stood looking down at her, and without rising she made a place for him on the bench. "I'm here on business, just got here," Archer explained, and, without knowing why, he suddenly began to feign astonishment at seeing her. "But what on earth are you doing in this wilderness?" He had really no idea what he was saying. He felt as if he were shouting at her across endless distances, and she might vanish again before he could overtake her. "I'm here on business too," she answered, turning her head toward him so that they were face to face. The words hardly reached him. He was aware only of her voice, and of the startling fact that not an echo of it had remained in his memory. He had not even remembered that it was low-pitched, with a faint roughness on the consonants. "You do your hair differently," he said, his heart beating, as if he had uttered something irrevocable. "Differently? No, it's only that I do it as best I can when I'm without Nastasia." "Nastasia, but isn't she with you?" "No, I'm alone. For 2 days it was not worth while to bring her." "You're alone at the Parker house?" She looked at him with a flash of her old malice. "Does it strike you as dangerous?" "No, not dangerous, but unconventional?" "I see, I suppose it is." She considered a moment. "Hadn't thought of it, because I've just done something so much more unconventional." The faint tinge of irony lingered in her eyes. "I've just refused to take back a sum of money that belonged to me." Archer sprang up and moved a step or two away. As he had furled her parasol and sat absently drawing patterns on the gravel, presently he came back and stood before her. "Someone has come here to meet you?" "Yes." "With this offer?" She nodded. "And you refused because of the conditions?" "I refused," she said after a moment. He sat down by her again. "What were the conditions?" "Oh, they were not onerous. Just to sit at the head of his table now and then." There was another interval of silence. Archer's heart had slammed itself shut in the queer way it had, and he sat vainly groping for a word. "He wants you back at any price?" "Well, a considerable price. At least the sum is considerable for me." He paused again, beating about the question he felt he must put. "It was to meet him here that you came?" She stared, and then burst into a laugh. "Edom, my husband? Here? At this season he's always at Kaiserbaden." "He sent someone?"
"Yes."
"With a letter?" She shook her head. "Oh, just a message. He never writes. I don't think I've had more than one letter from him." The allusion brought the color to her cheek, and it reflected itself in Archer's vivid blush. "Why does he never write? Why should he? What does one have secretaries for?" The young man's blush deepened. As he had pronounced the word, as if it had no more significance than any other in her vocabulary. For a moment it was on the tip of his tongue to ask, "Did he send his secretary then?" But the remembrance of Count Olenski's only letter to his wife was too present to him. He paused again, and then took another plunge. "And the person? The emissary?" "The emissary," Madame Olenska rejoined, still smiling, "might, for all I care, have left already, but he has insisted on waiting till this evening ... and you came out here to think the chance over?" "I came out to get a breath of air. The hotel's too stifling. I'm taking the afternoon train back to Portsmouth." They sat silent, not looking at each other, but straight ahead at the people passing along the path. Finally she turned her eyes again to his face and said, "You're not changed." He felt like answering, "Was, till I saw you again, but instead he stood up abruptly and glanced about him at the untidy sweltering park. This is horrible. Why shouldn't we go out a little on the bay? There's a breeze, and it will be cooler. We might take the steamboat down to Point Arley. She glanced up at him hesitatingly, and he went on. And a Monday morning there won't be anybody on the boat. My train doesn't leave till evening. I'm going back to New York. Why shouldn't we? He insisted, looking down at her, and suddenly he broke out. Haven't we done all we could? Oh, she murmured again. She stood up and reopened her sunshade, glancing about her, as if to take counsel of the scene, and assure herself of the impossibility of remaining in it. Then her eyes returned to his face. You mustn't say things like that to me, she said. I'll say anything you like, or nothing. I won't open my mouth, unless you tell me to. What harm can it do to anybody? All I want is to listen to you, he stammered. She drew out a little gold-faced watch on an enameled chain. H, don't calculate, he broke out. Give me the day. I want to get you away from that man. At what time was he coming? Her color rose again. T11. Then you must come at once. You needn't be afraid if I don't come. Nor you either if you do. I swear I only want to hear about you, to know what you've been doing. It's 100 years since we've met, it may be another 100, before we meet again. She still wavered, her anxious eyes on his face. Why didn't you come down to the beach to fetch me, the day I was at Granny's? She asked. Because you didn't look round, because you didn't know I was there. I swore I wouldn't, unless you looked round. He laughed as the childishness of the confession struck him. But I didn't look round on purpose. On purpose? I knew you were there. When you drove in, I recognized the ponies. So I went down to the beach. To get away from me as far as you could? She repeated in a low voice. Oh, get away from you as far as I could. He laughed out again, this time in boyish satisfaction. Well, you see, it's no use. I may as well tell you, he added, that the business I came here for was just to find you. But, look here, we must start, or we shall miss our boat. Our boat? She frowned perplexedly, and then smiled. H, but I must go back to the hotel first. I must leave a note, as many notes as you please. You can write here. He drew out a note case and one of the new stylographic pens. I've even got an envelope, you see how everything's predestined. There, steady the thing on your knee, and I'll get the pen going in a second. They have to be humored. Wait, he banged the hand that held the pen against the back of the bench. Tease like jerking down the mercury in a thermometer. Just a trick. Now try, she laughed, and bending over the sheet of paper which he had laid on his note case, began to write. Archer walked away a few steps, staring with radiant unseeing eyes at the passers-by, who, in their turn, paused to stare at the unwonted sight of a fashionably dashed-dressed lady writing a note on her knee on a bench in the common. Madame Olenska slipped the sheet into the envelope, wrote a name on it, and put it into her pocket. Then she too stood up. They walked back toward Beacon Street, and near the club Archer caught sight of the plush-lined erdic which had carried his note to the Parker house, and whose driver was reposing from this effort by bathing his brow at the corner hydrant. I told you everything was predestined. Here's a cab for us. You see? They laughed, astonished at the miracle of picking up a public conveyance at that hour, and in that unlikely spot, in a city where cab stands were still a foreign novelty. Archer, looking at his watch, saw that there was time to drive to the Parker house, before going to the steamboat landing. They rattled through the hot streets, and drew up at the door of the hotel. Archer held out his hand for the letter. "All I take it in?" he asked. But Madame Olenska, shaking her head, sprang out and disappeared through the glazed doors. It was barely 10:30, but what if the emissary, impatient for a reply, and not knowing how else to employ his time, were already seated among the travelers with cooling drinks at their elbows, of whom Archer had caught a glimpse as she went in? He waited, pacing up and down before the erdic. A Sicilian youth with eyes like Nastasia's offered to shine his boots, and an Irish matron to sell him peaches, and every few moments the doors opened to let out hot men with straw hats tilted far back, who glanced at him as they went by. He marveled that the door should open so often, and that all the people it let out should look so like each other, and so like all the other hot men who, at that hour, through the length and breadth of the land, were passing continuously in and out of the swinging doors of hotels. And then, suddenly, came a face that he could not relate to the other faces. He caught but a flash of it, for his pacings had carried him to the farthest point of his beat, and it was in turning back to the hotel that he saw, in a group of typical countenances, the lank and weary, the round and surprised, the lantern-jawed, and mild this other face, that was so many more things at once, and things so different. It was that of a young man, pale too, and half extinguished by the heat, or worry, or both, but somehow, quicker, vivider, more conscious, or perhaps seeming so, because he was so different. Archer hung a moment on a thin thread of memory, but it snapped and floated off with the disappearing face, apparently that of some foreign businessman, looking doubly foreign in such a setting. He vanished in the stream of passers-by, and Archer resumed his patrol. He did not care to be seen watch in hand within view of the hotel, and his unaided reckoning of the lapse of time led him to conclude that, if Madame Olenska was so long in reappearing, it could only be because she had met the emissary, and been waylaid by him. At the thought Archer's apprehension rose to anguish. "If she doesn't come soon I'll go in and find her," he said. The door swung open again, and she was at his side. They got into the erdic, and as it drove off he took out his watch, and saw that he had been absent just 3 minutes. In the clatter of loose windows that... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.